Okay, all right, this is Jeff Lindahl, and this is this week's Let's Grill Jeannie call. So if you have any questions for Jeannie, if you want to grill her, press star 0, and the operator will get you into the queue to ask questions. And I want to welcome the new students from San Diego. So if you have... What you can do is just get on the call and, like, if you have any questions about the Multifamily Millions bootcamp that you just attended or anything about raising money, Jeannie and I know all those answers, so we can help you with that. Let's see. We got the UP9 if you want to get in for $495. That's one of our biggest networking events. It's going to be next July, 2000. Can I change? Hold on a second. So we're waiting for Jeannie because she's getting back from the CTA, and when she was out there, everyone was buying her a lunch, so she didn't have to worry about lunch. So right now she's finishing up her lunch. She's getting on the call. She's eating some chicken wings. And that brings me up to another point. If you want to get some big brownie points from Dave, he likes dark chocolate. So if you're thinking of sending any chocolate into the office, he likes dark chocolate. So I just got back from the
Hi, everybody.
Atlanta. Hey, you made it. All right.
I did. How's everybody doing? So we just came from a excellent CTA event. Bob and Diane did a fabulous job. So if anybody's on the call, hey to you again. And I'm ready for questions whenever you are, Jeff.
Okay, so just bring the first question in. Go ahead, operator. If you want to ask a question, just press star 0.
We have no questions at the moment. Ladies and gentlemen, just as a friendly reminder, if you have a question, please press star 0. Star 0 for questions, please. Thank you.
So the countdown begins, 12 more days to Christmas. Can you believe it? It just crept upon us right from Thanksgiving to today. It seems like it's been a day. And here we are jumping around through hoops trying to get our shopping done. Jeff and I are headed to Philadelphia this weekend. And then that's it for the remainder of the year, for me anyways. Jeff, you?
Yeah, it's for me. I can't wait. I can't wait until Sunday night when we're flying back.
Yeah, and then I don't go out again until January the 5th.
Nice.
So I feel lucky
home
about
for
that.
The holidays, huh? That's great.
Yep. Home, no place to go. Enjoying my house. Any questions, operator? All people got their fill of me over the weekend, so now they don't want to talk to me today.
Yep. What's up? I just have to go through it.
Okay, are we ready for our first questions?
We are.
Okay, first question comes from Jose. Jose, please go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, what's up, Jeannie and Jeff? How are you guys doing?
We're good. How are you, Jose?
Oh, you know, just asking the experts to learn more. So,
good.
Got a question for either both. I think, Jeannie, as we're underwriting the deal, once we're in contract, if in contract, what's the rule for the taxes in order to not underwrite it with the current seller's tax rate? What's the rule for that?
Well, it's a minimum of $250 a door, but I would call the tax office and ask them what the taxes are. Don't trust anything.
Okay, perfect. And again,
hold on, right? When you call up the tax assessor's office, right? Don't give them the name
right.
of your property. Tell them the name of a similar property that you've identified as your competition in the market, so that you don't set a red flag, so they don't like push up and like increase your taxes right away.
Okay. Even if you're in contract?
Well, you're still on contract, but you're talking to the tax assessors. So you're saying, oh, I'm buying this property. You know, what's going to happen? When are my taxes going up? They'll say, oh, you're buying that property? How much are you paying? Right? You don't want that conversation. You want the conversation about the property down the street.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Okay. Now, I guess this question, again, Jeff, as you're one of the classes we had about the utilities, I think the rule was to get the current utility that the current owner is paying, but then times it times 1.02, is that the rule?
Yeah, we've noticed that utilities seem to have that spike in about 2% on the last like 6 or 7 deals that we've closed. But we always go by the historicals, and then you have to look at, yeah, so you underwrite for that. We're increasing it by 2%. And then you look at your value play. You might be able to do something with those utilities down the road, but that won't take effect until after you, when you start, like, budgeting out what you're going to be doing after you take possession of it. Yeah, so 2% right now. If that changes, we'll let you know. But, like, for the last, because originally we were just going by the historicals on how it was coming in.
Okay.
That takes a little bit of, it takes a little risk out of the deal, risk for you in case they do start going up that 2%.
Okay. And last question is, if we were to get in contract and some of the leases are expiring 3 months out, what is your strategy and what do you recommend? Is that something that we should ask the seller to extend, or what are your thoughts on something like that?
Well, you want to have staggered leases, but you don't want to take over a property where leases are out in 3 months, because what if they leave? I mean, are you going to be able to make your mortgage payments? Are you going to be able to pay your investors? So that's really a hiccup. So if it's somebody that's been in the property for years and years, I'm not so worried as somebody that has only been there for a year and it's due to expire. I mean, are they going to lease up? So I would, when I'm going through the due diligence, check those things to make sure that people are living there for a number of years, and it's not, the likelihood is they're not leaving. But somebody that's only been there for a year, I would probably ask the owners to lease them up for another year as part of the contingency. Get the lease in place for another year. Even though they have 3 months left on their lease, offer them a menu of gifts like a new accent wall or, you know, new lighting fixture, something to get them to lease up for another year at a higher rent.
Okay, it seems that Jose's line dropped. He should be joining us back shortly, I believe.
Okay.
Okay, our next question comes from Laura and Michael. Laura, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. We have a lot of questions, but we'll just start with one. We were wanting to partner with Dave in an emerging market. We just got the package last night, and we wondered if he would consider this unit mix where it turns out 77% is one bedroom.
Well, that's not really our model, but it depends on the longevity of the tenants and what's going on in the area around it. It could be an area that's all you see is one bedrooms, but we'd have to take a look at it, but it definitely is not our model. Our model is for every one bedroom, you need two bedrooms.
Right. I was very excited until I saw that.
we'd have to look at it and just see. I mean, if the tenants have been there for 10, 15 years, it's not likely that they're moving anywhere. It could be an extreme singles neighborhood, like people that are in the software engineering market tend to have one bedrooms because they're hardly ever there. They're always working. But, yeah, I don't know. We'd have to take a look at it.
Hey, who could help us to underwrite the deal? Is that one of our coaches, one thing he helps with? Or
You should be working with your coach on the underwriting. But if he is unavailable, both Jermaine and I in the office can take a look at what you get. But
okay.
It is your coach's responsibility to work with you on the underwriting.
Okay. So if we don't have our call right now, we can just email the information back and forth.
Yes. And your coach is available by email, and it may take them 24 hours to come back to you because, you know, they don't get paid for emails, but they do get paid for their calls. So, you know, they have businesses to run as well. So give them 24 hours, and you should get an answer from them. And if you don't, by all means, send it to Jermaine and I, and we'll take a look at it.
Okay. Thank you, Jeannie Fisher.
Oh, okay. Up next, we have Matt. Matt, please go ahead.
Hey there. Calling from snowy Michigan. So are you there?
Oh, is this Matt Donlin?
It is. How do you know?
Okay,
Matt
so
Donlin?
Because I know you're from Michigan, and I know you sent in a question. So I'm going to let you ask the question before I read the question.
Well, I thought maybe I should let you. I was going to read the question, but why don't you go ahead and read it?
Why don't you? Your voice is
okay,
better.
I'll read it. Am I allowed to use direct mail to high network individuals like doctors, lawyers, accountants, et cetera, and educate them on the pros and cons of real estate investing? An educational type of direct mail. And
well, I'd probably do it. Well, let's do question one first. If I was going to do a mailing to doctors and those kinds of people, I would sort of do like a little credibility kit on what you're about and send that rather than educate them on the pros and cons of real estate investing, because most doctors, most lawyers, most accountants, they already know this stuff because they're dealing with their own clients who are in real estate, and especially accountants. Everybody's got a CPA of some sort. So
Right. It's
not like you're going to educate them. You're just trying to tease them into wanting to know more about what you do. So
my concern is not offending the SEC rules. You know, what can I...
Well, you're not giving them returns. SEC doesn't say you can't send a mailing with information in it. They're saying you can't talk to them about one particular deal and give expected returns on that one particular deal before you even meet them. You can't do that.
Okay.
So I don't think sending an information booklet is going to offend the SEC at all.
Okay, good. So the question two is similar. Where do I find the do's and don'ts of such a mailing and maybe even sending invitations to educational meetup groups that discuss investing in real estate?
Well, rather than send in information, why don't you show up there and do your little one-minute elevator pitch and then go from there. But as far as getting a mailing, you can go to Melissa Data and buy a mailing list, and we have their information here. You can go to Claritas, who I believe was bought out by either Nielsen or First AM, one of the two. And buy
I'm sorry, what was
them.
The name of that one?
Claritas, C-L-A-R-I-T-A-S. And You can buy a mailing list from them, or you can just go on to a broker site and pull down mailing lists and be clear about the types of mailing lists you want. I mean, if you just type into Google, Google's an amazing thing, and you can type in doctors who are from Michigan State, and you will get a list of a million of them. And you can have a data entry clerk just type you an Excel spreadsheet. And there's your list, and it didn't cost you anything other than the $10 an hour you're paying the clerk.
Why did you say Michigan? Why wouldn't I want a list all over the United States?
Well,
be too many.
It would be too many, and I don't suggest you mail all over the United States. I suggest you mail in areas that you want to buy in. And you should start with Michigan. Michigan is a good market. I don't say Detroit is, but Lansing is, and there's a few other towns there that are really good. So why not start there? And I would start with a list of 500. Don't go crazy sending it out to 10,000 people, because what if you get 200 or 300 responses? Who's going to answer those responses?
True.
So start small. Don't spend a lot of money on a mailing that you don't have the backup to get back to them should they raise their hand and want help.
Do you know a going rate for mailing lists? I got one.
I honestly don't have a going rate. Maybe Jeff does. I don't. I don't buy lists. We were
usually use Melissa Data, and they might have a minimum of like $150 or something for a list.
Okay. Great. Okay.
But
that's
start
all I
with
have
a
for
smaller
now.
Mailing. Start with 250, Matt. Start with 250 names and addresses. Send that out. If you get three responses, that's good. Then you can go larger afterwards. But people might not be ready today. So you might have to mail to that same list three different times to really get a pop. But you got to make sure you can fulfill and handle all of the underwriting that you're going to be doing should they come in. You don't want to waste your money.
Right. So if I get a response, then that's indicating that they want to know more of what
that
I'm
doing. That they're a little bit
I'm
more motivated. They're a little more motivated than somebody that didn't write back to you.
Right.
There's a reason why they picked up the phone and called you and say, hey, I'm interested in what you just sent me.
So is it appropriate to say what I'm establishing is a group of investors, and when the deals come in, send the deals to this group, and they pick and choose whether they want to get in on the particular purchase or not?
You know what? I'm a one-on-one girl. I'm a one-on-one girl. What you're suggesting is crowdfunding, and I know it's allowed, but there are certain rules and regulations that go with it. I'm a one-on-one person. I like to call them individually, talk to them individually, let them know what they can expect. One-on-one, not anybody else.
Okay, so but even if you show them or tell them about a deal that's being looked at, Dave said always get more investors than you need.
Yep.
So that if they drop out in the last minute, then you've got somebody to fall back on. Is
right.
That true?
We're doing a property in Alabama, and I only needed 14 investors. Well, I only needed really 11 investors, but I have 26. And their money's not in the bank, but I have 26 people that have wanted to be in the property. They will sign all of the documents. And it's whoever gets their money in first that we put into the deal.
Wow. And you still let more than more into the deal than you need still once?
Yeah.
So that if anybody backs out. Oh, now what
if anybody backs out, I have somebody else.
Yeah, but
you
got to
send it back. You got to send it back. You can't take it. You can't take more than you
need. And they say, well, wait a minute. I sent you, I told you I wanted in on the deal, and you're sending my money back? What are they going to feel about that?
Well, they're going to feel the next time I have a deal, they're going to be the first ones in.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, first come, first serve. Yep, thanks, Gina.
Yep. All righty.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, up next we have Julie. Julie, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
Hi, Julie. Is this Suoki? Is this Julie Suoki?
No.
Okay, Julie.
No, I'm in San Diego.
Huh?
In San Diego.
Oh. How are you?
Good. I'm just researching some markets, and I had a question. Is there a seasonal trend as well? Some of the markets that are listed as emerging markets are showing a little downward turn, and I'm wondering if it's just because is November typically kind of a seasonal slowdown, November, December?
Well, a lot of people don't move into new places around Christmas time, a lot of people, because they got kids, they want to celebrate Christmas where it's homey, and they don't move into new places. But it just depends on where it is and what the economy is looking like there.
So should I back it up with the employment and all the other indicators? I mean, so
absolutely.
Because I've looked at some of the ones that are marked as emerging markets, but when I go in there, there's a downward trend for the last month. And I'm wondering if that's just seasonal or if it's something I should just look for another market.
Well, you know, that's like a dual-fold answer, in my opinion, because if there's a downward trend, I mean, school just started in September. You're talking about November. People are settling in. Maybe the owners are getting the property ready for sale, and they've got some units they want to upgrade so that they're actually asking people to move out. If they're thinking of moving and they heard when that they're thinking of moving, they'd ask them to move out, fix up the units before they sell so that they can make the most amount of money. But I would just look overall at the trend that's going on in that area and maybe call the Apartment Owners Association and find out from them what they're seeing.
Okay. Okay.
And then it doesn't hurt to send somebody to, if you're thinking of buying that property and you're nearby, maybe send a secret shopper like yourself or somebody else into the property and check it out and see what you see.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. All right. Great. Thank you.
You know, she didn't say what type of trend she was looking at to
nope,
pick gave her that
didn't.
Indication. Yeah, so I was just, like, wondering what trend she was looking at. All right, who's next?
Well, I have a question.
Okay.
Go ahead. Oh,
I'm so sorry, Jeannie. Okay,
nope.
Sorry about that.
Nope, I've
got
your question. I'll read mine next.
Okay. Sid, please go ahead.
Good afternoon. It's Sid from Dallas.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
We're doing marvelous.
We've been missing you at some of these events.
Oh, they got me running. Question is, what is the crossover point between when you would look at a JV versus going into a full PPM?
I would say,
four or five.
Well, number one is if you can go into a JV, there's more money for everybody. So a joint venture is you've got one other partner or two people that are one partner, and you and your partner are one partner, and then you're going to do the deal. They're going to bring all the money. You're going to do all the work. That's a beautiful 50-50 split. When you do a syndication is when you don't have anybody that can put up the down payment. So you're pooling together people's money.
Right.
And that's when you have to have a SEC attorney on board.
Okay. Other than that, y'all have a great Christmas. And come on down.
Said,
70 degrees.
What?
70 degrees.
What did you just throw in there at us? 70 degrees? Oh, yeah, by the way, I hope you're freezing, right?
Merry Christmas to you.
I think we're due for a dip this weekend.
Take care, Sid.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Tom Boyle.
Tom, how are you? How's Denise?
Good.
You're
good.
Digging
She's
up.
Here too.
Hi, Denise. I haven't heard from you since that little property went belly up, or did it go belly up?
No, it didn't go belly up. We own it now.
You do?
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, I'm so happy.
We got a spot for you reserved on the Wall of Fame.
We're going to do a high five to Tom and Denise. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Gosh,
thank you.
I think you worked on that a whole year, didn't you?
No, it wasn't quite that long, but it sure seemed like a long time.
Yeah, you had a lot of hiccups going on. But, boy, did you guys get an education for yourselves, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. There was a number of times that we were ready just to throw the towel in and say, you know what, it isn't worth it. But then we think back of what kind of education we're getting, and, you know, that it's not too big of a deal, that it was definitely worth the size of the deal for the education we got.
Awesome. That's awesome. Happy to hear from you. What's your question today?
My question has to do with accounting. Reports that we get from our property manager are on a cash basis. And what it doesn't allow us to see is where we're at in regards to items that are yearly costs such as taxes, property taxes, and insurance, and reserves. Should we have them give us reports on an accrual basis instead?
Listen, Tom, do yourself a favor. Call that property management company and tell them you want a license to the software that you're using so you can see for yourself. You want to look. And you should also get something on your phone, a camera on your phone that you can view what's going on at the property when you're not there. So you get a license to go in and view what numbers they put in, what numbers that you can look at, and you're going to see everything. And you won't need them to do a report because you'll do your own report. That's my
take. That's been a little bit of a challenge, and we're giving them a little bit of a grace period because no sooner did we take the property over and we hired the property manager that they started out with a new software.
So you should have been in that training with them. Do not let them give you that song and dance because I don't buy it.
And it's
I don't buy it, Tom.
We will be able to go online. They're telling us that it's any day now that we're going to be able to go online. They've been holding back letting us go online for the last thing that they need to change is that they don't want owners to go into the software and be able to make changes. And that was a glitch that they had to get fixed before they would release us to be able to see the everything that they're doing. and not just the reports.
And when did you close?
When did we close?
Yep.
September 9th.
It was September 9th.
So October, November, December, give me a break. It's a small property. I don't buy it. I don't like it. I'm just telling you. You should have been seeing day one, everything that comes in, everything that goes out. If a check comes in the mail, are they depositing it the same day? You got to know that. I'm just telling you, it doesn't bode well when your property management company, who's getting paid on collected rents only, is hiding facts from you.
I don't get the feeling that they're intentionally hiding. As it is they are trying to get that new software up and running and running properly before they open it up to their owners to be able to view on a daily basis.
Because you're such a nice guy, Tom. You are such a nice guy. You really are. You're paying them out of your good hard-earned money to take care of this. What's the kind of software they're using? Is it Rent Manager? What is it?
It's AppFolio.
AppFolio.
You better come again. What's your name?
AppFolio. AppFolio.
AppFolio.
I never heard of it. But even still, it couldn't have been custom made for them.
No, it's not. It's not custom made, so.
So contact a vendor that sells it, right? And act as if you're going to purchase it and have them come in and give you a demonstration on how it works and all that. So when they do get it up and running for you, you'll be able to, like, jump right on it because you'll have, like, at least a little experience using it. Just call up. Have a sales rep come down and run a demo on that software for you.
Good idea, Jeff.
Okay. But they should be entering in. They should be entering in on a monthly basis all of the yearly expenses, shouldn't they?
Yep.
You
want a bird's eye view on a monthly basis.
Right. That's where my primary question falls is we want to see that bird's eye view on a monthly basis, which means that we have to, you know, it may stay in the account, but we have to deduct the yearly expenses on a monthly basis so that money's in the account to pay the taxes when they come due.
Exactly. See, listen, when we do reports for our investors, we give them what came in the door, what went out the door, exactly itemized. We also give them a balance sheet. So they are viewing the actual bank account for that property. Everything that went on in that property, you can see if they spend $10 on tape, you can see it. So this is what
you
want to see.
When you do a distribution in a month,
we send the balance sheet with it.
It goes with the balance sheet with it, but if it is in the months that do not have yearly expenses, are they still come out, the 1/12 of that expense comes out of the of the account, right? And that would show up in the balance sheet.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. We'll keep you in touch
so
on
what
it.
We send is an executive summary, a dashboard report, a balance sheet, an income statement, a monthly variance report, a box score, a market survey, and a bank statement reconciliation on every single month. That's what they get.
Can you repeat that again? Because I'm sure people are like writing that down, Jeannie.
Okay. Executive summary. a dashboard report, a balance sheet, an income statement, a monthly variance report, a box score, a market survey, and a bank statement reconciliation. That comes out with every single month they have that report. It's called an owner's report. And then individually, they have a separate sheet, because I sent, that's a whole report that goes to everyone, but individually emailed, they have their account summary, how much they put in, what their portion of ownership is, how much they've earned for the month, and how much they've earned for the year, actually. Everything is on the same report, and it's a chronological report. So that at the end of the year, when December rolls around and they've gotten their report January the 10th or 15th, then they can see the whole year, so they don't have to wait for a K-1 to come to the mail for them. They can go see their accountant. And the only thing they do at the end is give their accountant the depreciation.
Okay, is there anything on the website that
I can send you? I can send you this so that you can see it.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Okay.
That'd be wonderful. Okay.
All right, Tom.
Well, thank you so much, and have a Merry Christmas.
And you too. Give my love to Denise, and I hope to see you guys soon.
Yes, we do too. We'll see you that soon. Take
Definitely.
Care.
Bye-bye. Jeff, better yet, do you want to post that one report up on the coaching site for people to go in and look at?
Oh, yeah. Send it over to Tremaine. Can help post it up there for the call.
Yeah, I'll send it over to him. It'll be nice and easy. Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Up next, we have Trinita. Trinita, please go ahead.
Hi, girlfriend. How are you?
Hi, Jeannie. I'm doing awesome. Hi, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Celebrating
how are you?
You're celebrating your husband's birthday in a big way, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't turn 67 every day.
No, you don't.
Yes. Anyway, I had a question about last call. Dave talked about Baltimore is moving. And I've been doing, of course, that's my backyard, and I've been doing a lot of research in it. And there's pockets that are doing a lot of building. But as far as Baltimore moving, I guess I'm trying to figure out what is it based on. Is it just a job growth?
Yeah, you got to look around, and you can call the Economic Development Committee right there in Baltimore and ask them what new jobs are coming in and what they're doing to revitalize downtown areas. The only reason why we don't buy, per se, in Baltimore itself is because there's no zoning there. But if you live there and you know things that are going on, it's okay to buy them.
Okay, so when you say no zoning, you could be in a residential property but have a commercial building?
Or you could have a commercial building, a gas station, and a house next door to the gas station. That's what I mean.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Thanks a lot. You guys have a great holiday.
You too, Trinita.
Yeah, you too.
Take care.
Okay, up next we have Roger. Roger, please go ahead.
Hey, it's Roger from sunny Southwest
Florida. From sunny Southwest Florida.
84 degrees.
Oh, my God.
I'm very late into this call, but two quick comments, rather more than questions. We have two property managers that use AppFolio, and it seems very good and very powerful. There's about 19 different reports that could be generated, but you can tell your property manager or AppFolio which reports you want, and it'll generate just about anything you want. So including all the things that you rhymed off, Jeannie. So I think it's good
software. That's good for you, Tom.
My other comment is, I don't know whether anybody deals with Fannie Mae, but we've spent weeks going around and around in circles with Fannie Mae. Their terms sound good, and it's non-recourse, but every day they have new things they have to have. So we just keep postponing the closing date. So I don't know whether anybody else has had that experience, but they're absolutely impossible to deal with. I don't think I'll deal with Fannie Mae again, but just FYI, thank you. That's all I have at the moment. Thanks.
Okay. Have a Merry Christmas, you, your wife, your son, everybody.
Thank you, Jeannie. All the best to you and your gang.
And you too. Take care.
Okay. We have no questions at the moment.
Okay. So Rosemary Dean wrote in a question. One of the objections we are coming up against in raising money is the third-party verification of financials, income, and expenses and distributions, New York. Investors are understandably nervous about Madoff. How do you deal with this? I don't know why you're getting into all of this third-party stuff. You want somebody that's interested in investing in the property. You set up a minimum investment. You send them the paperwork. They ask you questions. You answer the questions. And they either want to be in the deal or they don't. What about Bernie Madoff? I mean, so what? We don't deal with it. It's never even been brought up. And Rosemary, Jeff's answer is my answer is to have them talk to the Donald. He is from New York. That was funny. But seriously, you don't have to go into income and expense verifications of people with money. If they have money and it's liquid money, they invest in the property. You don't have to go in and say, oh, well, show me where you got that money. They're not buying a house, Rosemary. They're investing in a property. You're the key holder. You decide who comes in and who doesn't come in. I don't get this question at all. I think you're putting too much into it, mainly because you're a broker and this is what they do, but I don't think you need it. That's just my take. Any other questions, operator?
Yes, we actually have Jose back on the line. Jose, please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Jose. We lost you there.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't want you guys to get the impression hanged up. I didn't like your answer. So,
Jose,
yeah,
you either get the truth or you get a lie, one of the two.
That's the first time someone's hung up.
All right, so you guys are good. So I want to take advantage of this call, and I actually thought of other questions. So, Jeff, can you rewind and tell me the answer again about the tax, about calling and not letting them know about the property? What would be the typical – I mean, if you're in contract, how would you find out the tax rate to call any tax assessor?
Well, you call them up and ask them if there's any scheduled, tax adjustments due and find out if they are, if it's due in 2 years or 4 years, and ask them what they base it on and tell them, hey, I'm buying this property. While I'm buying I'm looking at a property, because you're doing the competition analysis, so you're actually looking at your competition too. And so you're just saying, hey, this is a property I'm looking at. This is the year it was built, and they'll be able to look it up. I go, when is it going to be reassessed for taxes? What are they currently paying?
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Is there any tax hikes due coming up? So you really need to know what's going on.
Okay.
With it.
Okay.
Yeah. And call some property management companies up too, because they're looking at them, right? Ask your property manager companies, because you'll be screening some. Ask them where they, what they think, what we need the budget for taxes for the next couple of years.
Okay. All right. Good. Second question is, so I got a marketing package, and I see the scheduled rent and the income, and then I saw the rent rolls, and they actually provided some leases, so that's kind of cool. On some of the information on the marketing is different. The rent is a little bit different from what they provided on the lease agreements and tenant estoppels. So at what point would you call them in, if you were in contract, to make a trade-off? I mean, if at what point would you say, hey, check it out, I based my numbers on your marketing, but then I check, now I got more detailed info, which the seller provided. I mean, it's not a lot that I'm looking at a difference. I don't want to be a pain in the butt by nickel and diming the deal, but at what point would you make a difference call if you had to make a deal review and from your experience?
Well, first off, the fact that you're looking at leases, are they current leases or have they been in the property for a year and now maybe they've just got a rent increase? So that could be the difference in the amount. I mean, some people do a lease in January, and then they had a six-month lease, so they're renewing their lease maybe for a year, but with the renewal, it's an increase in rent. So you got to know about that one resident, what's going on. Sometimes information can be dangerous to people like you, Jose, that's going to read every line. I mean, but
okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
If you're
looking
at an actual rent roll, one that comes directly from the software, there's no fudging that. It's a PDF. You're going to look at an actual rent roll, and you're going to see when they started a lease, when they renewed, and what their current rent is. So, I mean, if you're looking at that and all of those numbers check out, I wouldn't be reading those leases. It's dangerous
okay.
for you. Have your property manager read leases, but not you.
All right. Okay, gotcha. I was getting a little anxiety there.
Yeah, get your missus to read them. She's good at that. Get the missus.
Okay. All right.
All right, Jose. Miss seeing
all
you
right.
around. We'll see you next time.
Yep, I'll see you guys at UP9. So that's all
awesome.
I have for today, and talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, right. Have a happy
yeah.
holiday.
Okay, you guys, bye.
Okay, no questions at the moment.
So pardon me if I'm being too direct today, but I'm not playing games. I think, you know. People like the direct approach, and that's what I'm giving them. But I love Jose. I've known him for.
That's why there's no questions.
Now.
That's why there's no questions, Jeannie.
I know people are afraid
to
answer.
I know.
People
Man.
Are afraid of the answer. No, I'm really generally sweet.
I tell people like Jeannie's like your grandmother, you know, like your favorite aunt. You're more like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah, maybe. My dog died last night.
Oh, my gosh.
Got hit by a car. I'm hot sick. It was 11 o'clock last night. I was watching the Patriots.
Oh, man.
And, so I lost my dog. So I'm upset today. But
it's terrible.
Yep.
Yeah.
I told Jermaine. He was the only one I told. No, I told you.
So, Jeannie, what kind of things do you want people to send you? You know, I see like you're having some flowers here. And, you know.
Well, I got a beautiful basket of things from Graciela, which was really nice today. Vanessa Felix sent me something. I haven't opened it yet. Very nice of our students. I got a beautiful bracelet over the weekend from one of the students at the private money. I mean, at the CTA, sorry.
Have you got any food?
I was in Long Beach. Have I got,
have you got any
food?
Baskets of food yet? Yeah.
I'm not a basket of food, no. I didn't
well,
do that. I usually share that with the office. But, yeah. Well, they sent out for Chinese food, so I got 3 chicken wings. That's what I had for lunch.
Oh, that's where you got the
usually
chicken.
Usually I have a salad, but I didn't bring it today. So.
Well, I was
okay,
with Jenny Fang.
Sorry
this
to
weekend.
Interrupt.
Oh, we got a question.
Yes, we do. We have Paul with a question. Paul, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How
good,
are
Paul.
You?
Paul. How are you? Yeah, we're doing good.
Good. How's it going? All right?
Good.
Hey, listen, I came across a property. It's in Texas. It's a huge one. It's 480 units, but it's an affordable housing. It's affordable housing portfolio. It's 14 different properties, 480
units. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
But the numbers on it are pretty good. I mean, the cap rates range anywhere from, they average around 12.26 for all 14 of them. They range anywhere from 10 up to 14%. Now, that's the cash on cash return. I'm sorry, cash on cash return. The cap rates are between 8 and 9.25. They average 8.49, and they were built. These buildings were all built between 1999 and 2005, so they're relatively new.
Yeah.
And
where are they located?
You know, they're in Texas. They're all in Texas. El Paso.
Yeah, but what part of Texas? El Paso?
Yeah, El Paso. Most of them are in El Paso.
It's not in a market that Dave likes.
No, that was my question.
Yeah. I'll tell you what his comment is on that. Let me find my little list here. He says that is one of the markets I know that he doesn't like, and let me tell you why. El Paso, not a good market. Stay away.
Not a good market. Okay.
Stay
yeah,
away.
That's why the numbers look good, but I wasn't. I didn't think it was a good market, though. All right, so maybe we'll shy away from it. That's a big one.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's a lot of underwriting. You guys got practice.
Yeah, we've got a lot of practice, believe me. we've had a lot of practice over the last couple of months.
yep. Yeah,
hey, Gina,
he doesn't
so
like
sorry
that
to hear
market.
About your dog. That's terrible. I'm so sorry
oh,
to hear
yeah,
about your
I'm
dog.
Getting, that was heartbreaking, Paul, but thank you. I appreciate
it.
Yeah,
all right.
My grandkids, they took it hard. So that was even worse because we had, you know, they live with us and it was, I bought the dog as a rescue dog for them.
You're going to have to get another one. You know that for Christmas. You have to get them another dog.
Well, I told them I would, but their father is saying that this was too much, you know, because he was crying like a baby. This
I know, it's
dog
tough.
Got hit by
it's
a car last
like
night
that.
At 11 o'clock at night. I mean, what the hell?
Wow.
I mean, it's
that's
an inside dog. It just happened to go out to go, you know what, and got hit by a car.
Oh, jeez. What a shame.
It's a tough Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
But thank you for saying so, Paul. And you have
all right,
a great
you guys,
Christmas
hey, listen,
with
have
your
a merry,
family.
Merry Christmas. Thanks,
you
too. Have a Merry Christmas, both of you, okay? Take care.
Okay,
thanks for the
answer.
I appreciate it.
Yep,
okay,
bye-bye.
Bye now.
Hey, up next we have William. William, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Jeannie.
Hi.
What's up, William?
You doing all right today?
Yeah.
Great. I just wanted to talk a little bit about bringing in multiple private equity investors and when you cross that line of needing to syndicate and bringing that process into the equation.
Well, the rule is more than three, you got to syndicate. But if you're the one bringing the investors into somebody else's deal, is that what's going on? Or is somebody bringing investors to you?
I would be sourcing the investors, but I'm thinking that if it's a high enough amount, it may take two to three investors of equal amounts or, you know, maybe various amounts to get that raise to where it needs to be versus just one investor?
So here's what you want to do. Just create an LLC. All three come into that LLC. Take that LLC, put it into your deal as a partnership, and then have the CPA that you hire to do your taxes at the end of the year break it and pay them their cash distributions. So you only have one LLC coming in. But I believe the rule is if you are syndicating, you cannot have one investor with more than 20% interest in the property, or they have to be underwritten similar to a TIC. But my idea is take the investors, put them in an LLC, and bring the LLC in as the investor.
Okay. Would the money need to be placed in the LLC before closing, or could that happen, or not before closing, but before the offer is made, or would that need to happen after,
no.
During?
It has to be done before you go to the, you know, send your information to the lender, because the lender's going to want to know who's in the deal.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to try and avoid syndication, especially in the first one if it's not necessary, but just trying to better understand the legal requirements.
Do a partnership.
Okay.
Have everybody pull their money into an LLC and take the LLC and make that the deal. So I, whatever the LLC name is, agree to purchase whatever the deal name is and or assign. And you're going to assign the LLC of these people as the name of the property.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. Well, thank you for the information. I appreciate it.
That's what I would do, too, because syndications, they're tedious. They're lengthy. They pay a lot of money for the syndication documents. I mean, but you need it if you're pooling together outside people with varying amounts of money. You need to syndicate. It's a rule. But if
okay.
you're just doing two or three people, do a partnership.
So as long as I have a prior conversation or prior relationship with one of the partners, then I can approach them later on about a specific deal, talking specific numbers, bring them into that partnership or that entity, and then use that entity to purchase the deal.
Right.
And then transfer.
And you're the managing member because you created the LLC. You're the managing member of it.
Okay. All right, great. Well, that definitely provides some clarity around that process. Thank you.
Have a nice Christmas.
I will. Hey. You too.
Thank you.
Jeff, thanks for...
have a Merry Christmas, William.
All right, great. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Bye.
Yep, bye.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Oh, we're at the top of the hour, 1:59. Time to use the microwave before Jermaine does. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's Let's Grill Jeannie. And if you weren't able to get on the call and ask questions, or if you're a little bit nervous and it was the topic that we were covering, just email them over to Jeannie, and she'll be happy to answer your questions. So
I will.
That'll do it.
Jeannie at Ari Mentor. See you soon, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jeannie. Bye.